Welcome to The Barbell Strikes Back. I'm your host, James McDermott, and my guest joining me on the show today is Jamie Swagler. Jamie is the owner and head coach of Swagler Strength and Performance, located in Auburn, New York. Jamie, how are you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, this is great to have you on the show because normally when we see each other, we're both very, very busy. You know, we're either at a meet, both coaching and lifting, or, you know, we're out at your gym, you know, in Auburn, and you're running a meet and lifting, which is, I want to talk all about that. So this is really the first time we've been able to sit down and really have a conversation, and I'm excited to learn more about you and your background and share that with all the listeners.
No, yeah, it is funny how we tend to just meet in certain circumstances, so it is nice to catch up and delve into a little bit more about each other.
Yeah, that's been one of my goals with this show is to get to learn more about people in my community because, you know, see all these people at meets all the time, but there's just never any time to do anything. You know, you get in, you get out, you have 10 lifters. That's your whole day right there.
Yeah, no, it's meets are busy days for sure.
Oh, yeah. Now, I was trying to do my research before the show. So I was like, all right, I need to find some info on Jamie. So I went on Instagram. I couldn't find a whole lot there. I went on your website and I couldn't find like a profile or a bio there. Let's start with your background and then we'll kind of get into the gym. So I'm assuming you were an athlete, you know, in your younger years, whether it's that weightlifting or ball sports. So let's start there.
Yeah. So I played football throughout high school, went to Colgate, played football there. Ended up transferring down to Florida Gulf Coast in Fort Myers, Florida, and wanted to essentially move on from football. I was ready to move on to the next phase of life, I guess. And I always wanted to do something I was passionate about. So after football, you know, the next thing was training for football or training for sports. So I realized that there was a career path in that. And through my personal experience of lifting and training, Olympic lifting was a strong foundation of that. So that was kind of a natural thing I kind of gravitated towards. And through my personal training certifications, et cetera, you know, kind of working with different athletes over the years, decided to get my USA, you know, level one, then went on to get my level two, and really enjoy actually not just coaching the sport, but being around it and being an athlete myself as best as I can while juggling the gym and the work demands. And I have four kids at home and a wife. So time is a few and far between, but when training, that's how I enjoy training. And it's brought me, you know, to the gym, and it's created a great community there and meet other, you know, barbell owners like yourself. It's a pretty unique community. But it's fun to be a part of.
Oh yeah. And now when you were doing football and in college, who taught you the lifts? Did you learn both the snatch and the clean and jerk during that time, or was it just a separate thing?
Honestly, throughout high school, we had a strength program at high school. Didn't do a lot of snatch work, until I actually delve in a little bit more, on my own, just because I think how complex the snatch can be for younger athletes to learn without, you know, maybe a coach knowing exactly how to teach them how to snatch. That was something that was just kind of not a priority. Even at the college level, we didn't snatch at all. So it was more so on my own. And honestly, we didn't do a whole lot of jerking either. You know, it's more, you know, if we're doing it was a push press or, you know, strict press overhead. So it's more so, you know, self-taught, I guess, per se, you know, going to seminars and educate myself and obviously watching my form. And I think I generally had the concept from years of training and, you know, self-critiquing. I was able to get myself where I was in a good position. So
now, has that changed your coaching philosophy at all? You know, when you were starting, no one taught you the snatch. When you get these football players in or other athletes in, do you teach them to snatch or do you just kind of keep it at the clean right now?
Honestly, I'm not afraid to incorporate it because I'm confident coaching it. Obviously it depends on, you know, who we're working with and their athletic needs and risk to reward ratio. But Honestly, I think we fundamentally start with honestly simple, just dumbbell snatch, dumbbell hang snatch. We'll transition from there into some high hang snatches. Just again, more working about bar path form. It's never, we're never really focusing on weight per se. I don't have a ton of heavy snatchers that we're snatching from the floor, especially with our athletes, because we work in groups, you know, relatively larger group settings. So it's something that we can't really delve into and, you know, really critique as a competition lift. It's more used as a, you know, a training lift to help them be more explosive. So it's more of a exercise to transfer their power from the weight room into the basketball court or football field or ice rink, whatever, you know, whatever their domain is. So yeah. It's incorporated, but not taught as a competitive lift like I would with my Olympic lifters. That's obviously a whole nother arena, but yeah, with our general athletes at the high school and college level, where we stay more in the skill transfer area, but we do have some athletes or members of the gym that do, you know, do more, I guess you would say more CrossFit based workouts where we do dig in there a little bit more and focus on our technique.
No, that's cool. And I think it's smart, you know, working, especially with like the youth athletes or teens and stuff, you know, for sports, getting that dumbbell in their hands. You know, I've found myself, maybe you found this, teaching someone first with a dumbbell kind of helps all those little issues that would occur with the bar path later on, because mm-hmm. they just learned how to keep an object close to their body, because it's really hard to kick a dumbbell out in front of you with a barbell. It's easy, but try doing that with a 35 or 50 pound dumbbell, and the dumbbell almost is auto correcting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's, again, I like to use it just more so just for power development. And again, I think dumbbells are cool because they can move. So you're able to transfer that weight, you know, work on balancing, stabilizing that dumbbell overhead, and help make the kids have ownership over their movement.
No, I think that's important. I like that, having ownership over your movement. You know, a lot of people maybe don't have ownership over their movement, and it's just kind of, you know, you need a coach, you need to spend more time getting in quality movement as opposed to allowing yourself to do the easy thing. What do you kind of say to your athletes when they want to take the path of least resistance and do things the fun way versus doing things the hard way that's going to get them ultimately to their goal?
Well, I just try to remind them that, you know, we're doing everything with intent in mind. It's a thought out process. You know, if this is something you want to get to, we can get there. But right now that's not quite where we're at. We're trying to build a foundation. And I have a plan and a blueprint. So just, you know, essentially try to tell them to trust the process, and we know what we're doing. So we'll take care of them.
Yeah. It can be hard to trust the process. What kind of process did you go through as a weightlifter just starting out? Like, did you have a coach? Did you just start going to meets, you know, and showing up by yourself?
I mean, we had a small group of lifters that, actually one of my, athletes got me into, she kind of pushed me into signing up and competing. I didn't necessarily have a coach. She you know, would help me, you know, count my warm-up sets and stuff like that, but in the sense of training and preparation, I was kind of self-taught or self-coached beyond the, you know, high school and collegiate level. When it got to competitive weightlifting, I was kind of just doing my own thing, training, and then decided I was kind of encouraged into doing a meet. I was like, this should be fun. And it's definitely different because I come from a team sport background, you know, with football. So being in a individual sport is a little different for sure. You know, standing up there by yourself on a platform.
Yeah.
Definitely different, but it's fun though too, because it's brings back a lot of memories of being competitive and kind of those emotions and feelings you get when you, either make that first hit on the field or, you know, score a touchdown after, you know, similar to like completing a big lift. You know, it's a thrill, and it's a lot of fun. It keeps it exciting, keeps the training motivating, and it's good stuff.
Yeah, I imagine too, the culture shock of going from football where there's all this energy and you have a crowd that's cheering for you, and then you go to a weightlifting meet and it's silence. or at least like it was back then, you know, like when you first started, it was probably definitely different than how it is now, you know, no music, maybe a little less enthusiasm from everyone around, you know, everyone loves weightlifting, don't get me wrong, but it was certainly a different environment, you know?
No, yeah, for sure. That was something that was definitely took some getting used to, you know, like you said, you know, normally there's a lot of noise, crowd noise, you know, music, whatever, getting you all jacked up. And, you know, now it's, you know, when you're on the platform, it's, you know, somewhat of controlled aggression. Like they say in football, you should have controlled aggression, but there's definitely a lot of finesse, strength, power involved in weightlifting. And it all happens essentially at once. You know, there's not another play necessarily to make up for the bad play. Yeah, you get a couple attempts, but it's a lot of pressure because, you know, there's not as many attempts as there are plays in a football game. So you got to make each one count for sure.
Yeah, months of training for, you know, less than like a couple seconds out on the platform, you know, and it's just over before you know it. What do you try to do with your athletes now to get them in the right mindset to be able to handle that scenario on a meet where it's like, look, we put in all this work and you're only going to be out there for this fleeting moment and you have to do everything in your power to succeed and make these lifts?
Obviously it depends on the athlete and how they're kind of wired. Generally speaking with my athletes, I try to shrug off the pressure because, you know, as much as you can build it up, it's almost self-created pressure. You know, it shouldn't be no different than any other lift you're doing. You know, just go out there, hit the lift. You've done it before. Have confidence in yourself. This is the fun part. Don't put the pressure on yourself. Again, especially when you're at your, you know, home gym, it's more fun. And just again, it's time. It's time to show off what you've worked so hard for. And it should be the fun part. Obviously, there is some added pressure because you got people watching you and you got competitors and everything, but you can't control those things. You just got to control what you can control and enjoy it. Cause that's what, you know, that's what everyone's working so hard to do.
Yeah. Do you, in your competition history, do you remember any moments where you kind of weren't able to get out of your head and maybe you had a rough meet? And then how did you bounce back from that on the following competition? Cause that can be tough. So in weightlifting, a mistake you make at one meet can sometimes travel with you all throughout the next couple months of training. And then it's right there again at the next meet, you know, oh man, am I going to bomb out again? You know, how do I mentally recover from this?
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely been challenging times, especially honestly for me, like that first snatch, if you miss that first snatch, it's like, I get in my head.
It's the worst thing in the world.
Yeah. It's like, oh man, now what? I don't know if it's been meet to meet, but definitely if that occurs, that definitely can throw me off for the remainder of at least the snatch session. Obviously, it puts a little added pressure on you. So my goal is really, you know, especially when listing my starting weight, you know, try to keep it low. As I'm warming up, kind of see how I'm feeling and try to go off that and make any adjustments on the fly as I'm going and make any changes. But honestly, for me, the biggest thing is trying to hit that first snatch, and then, you know, the rest can, then the pressure is off for me and I feel good about, you know, the rest of the meet. I had a meet at the end of, it's been a while, but I think it was end of 18. I killed it. And that was a really fun meet. Hit, you know, I think I went 6 for 6, and after each final lift, I was like, wow, you know, I felt everything felt good, you know? So when it all comes together, I remember training for that meet and putting it all together. That was very rewarding. And those are the things you shoot for in training, I guess, and you try to recreate those types of meets every time you have a meet. It doesn't always happen that way, but, I specifically remember how I felt that meet and the preparation. And it was, that's what you want, you know, when you train.
Yeah. It's like the meet starts once you hit that first snatch, but then if you miss it, it's like you haven't started yet.
Yeah.
And then that really starts to compound and weigh on you. When you were learning how to snatch and in those early days of weightlifting with your training, I'm not sure what you were doing in terms of programming or if you had a coach, what kind of mistakes did you make that you've learned from now? Like, okay, I could have done that better. And now I coach my athletes to do different.
Honestly, probably probably just having a coach, you know, someone that was more experienced than me, that had, you know, more training hours, that could see things that, you know, I couldn't see in myself. Because obviously when you're training yourself, you don't, maybe you don't see everything. I mean, I maybe do now because I've, you know, I've more trained and I know what my mistakes are. But starting out, you know, I always say you don't know what you don't know. So having someone that does know what they know, have eyes on you and give you some pointers and give you some advice to kind of get, steer you in the right direction. I think I could have excelled earlier if I had that. So again, for my lifters, I try to get eyes on them and give them as much advice as I can. And for any new lifters, I would suggest them getting in a coach, someone they trust to get eyes on them and help them along the way. So if they're going to stick with it, it's something that you can enhance their, you know, or flatten the learning curve so they can excel at a faster rate than rather doing on their own and making their own mistakes and finding out the hard way or realizing years after training, oh, I'm doing this wrong, or I should have been doing this years ago.
Yeah. Is there anything that stands out in your mind in terms of like, all right, my squat volume was too high, or I wasn't working on pulls, or I wasn't taking the time to do this for my jerk technique?
Honestly, I think I had a little bit of a hard time getting under the bar, more so with confidence than physicality. I was capable of it, but the thought of, you know, getting under, you know, 200 plus pounds, you know, fastly in the overhead position was something it took some getting used to. I was definitely more of a power snatcher. But then, you know, once I realized I was capable of doing it, just was a matter of repetition to build my confidence level, to make it second nature. So I'm just, you know, getting on the bar nice and fast, catching it, stabilizing and standing. But again, it took a little bit because obviously, you know, you see fails, you see videos and, man, and there's been a couple of close calls here and there, but I guess that's part of the learning process. But
yeah,
I would say getting under the bar was the biggest hiccup I had.
Yeah, it's missing a lift can teach you a lot, you know, because there's a reason why you missed that lift, and missing it in the bottom of the squat for a full snatch, you'll probably learn a lot more that way than you would from a power snatch where you can get away with a lot.
Yeah,
and I think you said it well. You know, you didn't have the confidence to drop under the bar, but that's also another big role of a coach. Right, is give you that confidence, and that's what you do now with all of your athletes.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Now, how long into your lifting career until you started Swaggler Strength Performance?
Honestly, as a gym owner, that happened first. I opened the gym December 2011, and really kind of started. I all of a sudden had the, you know, starting a gym, you realize you have more free time than you would have thought when you first opened. So I had more time to train then. So I was able to just, you know, dig in a little bit more in my own training, work on things like the snatch that I didn't necessarily dedicate the time to previously, and realize that, you know, through, you know, I guess I started with kind of like the CrossFit, you know, that's kind of what got me into, you know, pushing myself to snatch more, and then kind of phase out of the interest in that into more just the traditional, you know, weightlifting. And that's which led me to kind of the competitive weightlifting. So I guess really just having more time on my hands than I do now was really what allowed me to train harder and more consistently to work on those lifts and get me, I guess, to where I'm at now.
Yeah, I mean, you open a gym and it's like the old saying, if you build it, they will come. Well, you also have to wait for them to come, you know. More than likely, unless you're like a major star in some sport, no one's going to be kicking down the door and be like, personal train me, can I take your classes?
Yeah, yeah, especially in, you know, where we are, we're in upstate New York. So, you know, it's not a, especially in, you know, in some of the colder months, you know, not everyone's as anxious to get moving, you know, when it's cold out and snowing and this and that. But again, you know, the community here has been great. You know, we've been successful. Like I said, we've opened in end of 2011. You know, we've made it through this pandemic. You know, we're still growing strong. We're in our third location. We don't have three locations, but we've moved three times into bigger spaces. We're just under 12,000 square feet currently. We started in a little 1,000-square-foot facility, so we've done well, and you know, the support of the area has been great. But like you said, you know, it's time, it's effort, but again, just like your lifts, dedication, you know, and consistency and hard work, you know, with those things over time, you know, good things happen.
Yeah, and they good things happen to those who are patient too, to allow them to happen. When you were starting your gym, you know, there's probably a lot of things that you learned about it. What advice do you have for someone who's listening right now, and maybe they're an athlete or someone coming out of school, you know, doing ball sports, and they're in a similar situation where they want to start a little gym where they're also coaching athletes, you know, kids from the local schools and doing some personal training. How do you start something like that? Like, do you email the schools? How do you get those kids in your gym?
Yeah, no, it's tough starting out because, you know, we're in a position now where we have enough work behind us to show that, you know, what we do and what we can do. So people trust us at this point, but it is hard starting out and essentially earning that business or earning that trust. You know, I was lucky to know certain people that, you know, had kids that, you know, were, they trusted me already. So they brought their kids in and gave me an opportunity to work with their kids. And then, you know, it's more so word of mouth. You know, we didn't do a ton of advertising. I knew some of the coaches, but, you know, a lot, you know, fortunately, the kids have programs at the high school already. So if the kids were looking to do a little extra, you know, go above and beyond, the parents would reach out to me. Again, more so through word of mouth, because it was like, well, my son's going here. Oh, well, maybe Johnny should go, you know, and then it kind of, you know, one thing after another, you know, a couple players on the team start coming and it kind of grows from that. But it really comes down to, I guess, earning their trust, whether it's the parents or the kids. And from there, it was word of mouth. And it's really, you know, business relationships. So the better you can create, or the faster you can create those relationships and have real relationships with these people, that would be my best advice. Try not to start too big, start small, you know, do whatever you're doing really well and be patient, because it'll come, but maybe it's not as fast as you want it to come, but it will. And just be you and be true to, you know, what your values and morals are and what you're trying to accomplish. And sooner or later, it'll happen for you.
Yeah. And be authentic. You know, yeah. I mean, you seem very authentic versus someone who's maybe just starting out. They barely have any credentials or accolades to them, and they just email the school, hey, send me all your sports teams, and they want to have 50 kids per session, you know, and just blowing it all out all the time.
Yeah.
That probably doesn't happen.
No. And again, as schools, I think training has evolved a lot over the last, you know, however, you know, at least for me, the last, you know, 10, 15 years from being an athlete into being a coach now, I think the education on it and the awareness of how important it is and how it can literally change the game or change kids' careers, whether it be from a rehab standpoint, a confidence standpoint, or just overall physicality, you know, be bigger, faster, stronger. That stuff I feel like used to kind of be overlooked or looked at like, oh, well, we don't want them to lift weights, we don't want them to get hurt or this or that. You know, there's more excuses or reasons why not to, versus now I definitely feel like there's more of an emphasis into, you know, off-season training and how important it is for the overall development of our athletes.
How do you answer that question when maybe you have a youth athlete and the parents are like, well, I read an article, lifting weights is bad, you know, for kids of a certain age.
Mm-hmm. Well, lifting weights improperly is bad for anyone.
Yeah.
And again, if you're bringing someone or a youth child or whoever to someone that's uneducated and isn't used to working with those types of that population, then you're setting yourself up for failure. But if you're taking someone that has experience, has a track record, and honestly just really having a conversation and say, well, this is how we go about it, and lay out your blueprint, let them know, you know, what you're going to do, make sure they feel confident in trusting you. And we don't do certain things, but yeah, we definitely incorporate resistance training. And again, it'll vary from kid to kid, because especially at that youth youth age, some kids are more developed than others. And, you know, that's something that needs to be noted and paid attention to and treated accordingly. So I really think it's in the sense of, you know, the parent, you know, saying I did this or read this, just having a conversation with them and, you know, explaining what your approach is going to be and make sure they feel comfortable trusting you with their child.
Yeah. I mean, it's building the relationship, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like it would be harder to build that relationship if you all of a sudden had 25 students signing up and coming in and you have all the parents along with them versus building it up gradually where you meet Johnny when he's 11 and you know him all the way up through, you know, till he's a grown man, you know,
yeah,
starting a gym of his own, you know, that's a relationship built over decades.
Yeah, no, yeah, you're right. And it's funny you say it because I have one specific athlete I've worked with since I think he was in sixth grade. Now he's a sophomore at Mount Union playing football there. So it's, you know, and he's been a kid that I've worked with consistently. You know, obviously our approach has changed over the years as he's developed. But yeah, no, those are the types of things that you get in the business for. You know, you get in the business to work with these kids at a young age and, you know, earn their trust and work with them throughout the years. And, you know, it's, you know, I remember working with him to help him get prepared for JV and then, you know, played JV and then, okay, let's get him ready for varsity. He's got to get stronger for varsity. Then it's like, okay, we got to get him prepared for college. And now he's at the college level, you know what I mean? So helping these kids grow and develop into not only athletes, but hopefully you're helping shape them as into better people too, and being a positive influence on them. I think it's an important role as a coach, no matter what coach you are, whether you're a weightlifting coach, a football coach, whatever the case is. But again, the parents are not only trusting you to take care of them physically, but I know they're paying you to be around them X amount of hours a week. So you would think that you should be a very positive influence on them and help influence them the right way.
Yeah. I mean, do you have those conversations with your athletes where it's like, hey, Billy or Susie, are you doing your homework? Are you passing all your classes? How are you taking that breakup with your boyfriend or girlfriend? What do you want to do, you know, for a job someday? Like, do you have those kind of conversations?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Especially the kids that have been around longer. Maybe some of the newer ones, we kind of break into that a little bit, but definitely kids that have been around a while. It's, you create these, you know, coach / friendship with these kids. And obviously you know more about them than just, you know, their sets and reps and how much weight they're doing. A lot of times, you know, their families, you know, what's going on. Cause again, I've been there before in the sense of being a high school or college athlete. So I understand some of the struggles or demands that they're going through. And I like to at least just share my experience so they can, I guess, be more educated, so they can be make better decisions. And again, just better prepare them for life in general.
Yeah. I mean, how do you navigate their social lives? You know, cause at a certain age, there's so much going on. If someone doesn't show up for practice, are you on the phone? You're like, hey, where you at? You know?
Yeah. Normally I'll shoot them a text like, hey man, everything all right? You know, cause again, you don't know what people are going through. So I kind of try to handle these kids with a soft gloves. Cause again, you don't know who's dealing with what. You don't want to come across too hard and them shut down on you. So I try to take a softer approach and just see if they'll open up to me. If they open up, then I'm, you know, then I dig in a little bit more and, you know, at least give them some feedback and try to steer them on the right direction. But I kind of leave it up to them and how much they communicate with me about certain things and kind of let them lead that direction and we'll go from there.
Yeah. So, I mean, if anyone's listening, it's like, this is not just a 1 hour shift when they come in and they do their training and then they go. This is 24 hours of being a coach. Communicating with all these kids and all your athletes. And this is just the sports aspect of it. There's still the barbell club side, right? And with your weightlifters. And do you have any other sports that you guys go after?
I guess right now we have baseball teams. Football was in just a little bit ago. Now they're back at their weight room. Lacrosse and hockey are our main sports that we work with. Then we got our weightlifters. Then we got our general public too. You know, the people that are, you know, have, you know, normal jobs that, you know, come in early morning, have families. So they try to carve out a little bit of time for themselves before they get on with their day. Or
how many coaches do you have?
Active coaches right now, I think we, including me, five.
Okay. Five. And that's still, that's a lot of work for five. So yeah. Are you a 5 a.m. to 10 p.m., 11 p.m. guy?
With homework. Yeah. Yeah. With programming and answering emails, all that stuff, that'll linger through the night. I have a hard time, you know, creating those boundaries and turning things off because it is a passion of mine and I enjoy helping people. So if someone's reaching out to me, and I see it, I'm going to respond. It's not one of the things where I'm just like, oh, I'll leave it for tomorrow. It's because I know me, I won't be able to leave it for tomorrow. I'll be thinking about it, or tomorrow will hit and it'll be chaos and I won't get to it. So I need to address it when it comes in and pay the attention that it deserves. And but yeah, early mornings, late nights, long weeks, but again, I do it because I care and because it's a passion of mine. So it's enjoyable. It's as crazy as it is.
I hear that, you know, it's like, it's not even a job. It's just, it's a lifestyle, you know, being a coach.
Oh, you're right.
I was on vacation a couple weeks ago and I was actually out there in Auburn. I was in a Skinny Atlas.
Okay. Yeah.
It was like, just like the highway away, which it was nice to be out in like the country again. Cause I grew up out in Afton, New York. So out in like, you know, the farms and stuff like that. So it was nice just to be out in that environment again. But I was still texting people and I had people say, hey, coach, be on vacation, go away. And I'm like, but I need an answer now. You know, I'm thinking about it now. I'm on vacation, but that doesn't mean I'm stopping thinking about the gym or weightlifting.
But you're not mentally on vacation.
No. Yeah. It's just my body. It's just like, I'm laying in a chair right now, exhausted, but I'm still thinking about our next training cycle and what we have to do and meets coming up. And so it's just a lifestyle. And a lot of people don't realize that when they probably see you, you know, like they're like, oh, well, he has an easy job, you know, or I wish I could do that, you know, that would be better. And they want to start coaching themselves and maybe don't realize all that you've had to go through to get to the level where you're at now. Do you think that there should be some kind of a professionalization of coaching in a similar sense of how there is with, let's say, nutrition, how you have registered dietitians, you have chiropractors, you have people who have licenses to be able to do this versus essentially anyone can do it? Because the fitness industry and coaching is kind of all over the place. And this is a conversation I've been seeing popping up in my feeds pretty regularly from all kinds of places on being professional coaches and needing a license and, you know, schooling.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And I can see both sides of it. Like it's great because there's so many opportunities to become a coach. If that's something you're passionate about doing. I mean, there's different avenues. You can go to weekend seminars. You can go online, take courses online. You can go in person and do coursing, you know, so it's great in that respect that the availability is out there. But I agree that there should be some sort of regulatory system to say, you know, we need to have these certain credentials before we can start, you know, physically working with people. I think that's one of the knocks on the industry because it's not as consistent as maybe other industries are across the board. And that's why unfortunately you have good coaches, you have bad coaches. But I guess that, you know, just cause, but at the same time, there's, I don't want to say there's good doctors and bad doctors, but there are, you know, just cause, you have a certification or a certain credential doesn't mean that you can, you know, transfer that into the real world and apply that to actual people. And, I do think that coaching is, I don't want to say a gift, but it's definitely something that's it's an art. It's not a science. And you got to treat everyone a little differently, but from the fitness aspect, you see all types, and that does make it frustrating from a business standpoint because, you know, Joe Schmo opens a gym, offers, you know, prices half your price, but people are just price shopping. They don't understand the value that you're providing versus someone else. And I think that's what gets overlooked is, maybe your value as a coach and your experience and maybe the time and effort you've put into educating yourself and the time you've spent in the trenches, it's hard to quantify a number or a value on that stuff. And even if you did, people are going to question it regardless, because like, well, why does he charge so much versus someone else that maybe just opened and is trying to, you know, undercut your prices just to get numbers. And I think that does make it a little frustrating from, you know, gym owner to gym owner, fitness instructor. And I guess that's my biggest gripe when it comes to that is just how people are quick to jump for a price. You know, if you have a new person looking and they're shopping around, you know, and they see your price versus someone else's price, they don't necessarily call and say, oh, well, what are your credentials and, you know, this and that. Like, they maybe they should, but maybe people don't do their own homework and, you know, just see price and they jump on a price versus what that person actually has to offer.
Yeah, I like the aspect right now of where someone can change their life completely. You know, maybe they're a very large person or a sickly person or someone who is just never good at athletics and sports. And then they start exercising and changing their life and building confidence and excelling in things that they never thought they would before. And then they decide, okay, I want to channel this passion into helping others do the same. And I know we've both met plenty of coaches who don't have the same schooling background as we do. And they're fantastic coaches because they're great motivators. They're great people. And my fear is that professionalizing coaching, we would lose out on all those people. Mm-hmm. But then on the same other side of the coin, I'm frustrated like you are, where it's like, all right, there's a lot of people who, you know, are clearly in this for just the money. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're in coaching, you know, you're probably not going to be a millionaire from coaching. You know, you are doing this because you enjoy coaching and helping people and you enjoy the, you know, the programming, all those little things, versus being someone who just throws things on a piece of paper that don't make any sense because they don't know what they're doing and they're taking advantage of people for money. You know, I guess that's similar to you. The frustrating part for me is like, well, why are you here? You know, and you hear how people, they're price shopping around and they are not able to discern from that guy and you. And then when they get burned by that guy, guess what they think about you? They funnel you into the same thing, right? It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the right answer is, you know, because also like, do we want government to step in and start regulating all this and licenses? And then they're telling you, Jamie, all of a sudden, well, you can't program that.
Yeah. We don't want all that, but yeah. And unfortunately I think that's I guess the world we live in, and, you know, the best thing we can do is you gotta stay in your lane, focus on you, and you can't control what other people do and, you know, who opens up down the street or what they're offering. You just gotta, you know, do you and provide a great service so people don't even consider anyone else. Like, well, this is the guy to go to, and that's it, you know? So again, it's tough because you know, it's hard not to think about those things, but I try to do my best just to keep tunnel vision and focus on us and, you know, control what we can control.
Yeah. I'm going to butcher the quote, but I saw some kind of Angelina Jolie quote the other day where she was talking about how she doesn't actively seek out relationships or seek anything out. What she does is she just lives her life, and whatever she truly has earned and is supposed to own will just be attracted to her. Mm-hmm. So she lives her life by attraction, not by seeking.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that's kind of how we've run our business. Honestly, we don't do a ton of marketing. We don't do any cold calls, you know. You might reach out to touch base with some people here and there that maybe it might be time for them to start training again and stuff. But we're definitely kind of, you know, have whether it's just through the years and creating those relationships, it seems that most people come to us, and that's how we attain our business versus promoting and marketing and this and that. So I can relate to that quote.
Yeah. And you're going to find people that really care about you and the place that you've built. I mean, I know we've done, you know, plenty of Groupon things before where you're offering, you know, a quick deal. And yeah, those are people who never work out in the long term.
No. But it's now, worth it, right?
Yeah. Sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Now with coaching, what are some big lessons off the top of your head that you've learned from your athletes? Because like as coaches, we try to give our athletes everything we possibly can, our experiences, everything we've learned. We're continuing to learn for them, but a lot of the times they're teaching you too, you know? So what have you learned from some of those athletes?
Well, one thing I've learned is what you said, that is that you can learn from them. You know, realizing that, you know, just because you're the coach doesn't mean that you can't learn from your students on occasion. And, you know, obviously through coaching and this and, you know, watching so many things, you're like, oh, wow, you know, I've never seen them do it like this. And I really, wow, I really like how they're doing this something. And you might be able to take that and, you know, run with that and actually use it with other athletes you're working with, or just helping keeping you relevant too. Because I feel like as things change and kids, you know, working with the kids, they kind of keep you in the know of what's going on with things. So honestly, I can't say it's one or two big things. It's little things along the way that what more so for me, it's the coaching, you know, seeing things here and there, realizing, you know, making my own kind of conclusions of, you know, I saw this happen. I think this is why it's happening. And I wouldn't have learned it unless we were doing something with a specific athlete. Again, I can't say there's a couple big things, but a lot of little small things along the way that helped me kind of fine tune some of my coaching to get it where it's at now. And again, just to kind of, like you said, just keep learning from them, because again, you can never know everything. And sometimes, you know, certain athletes have certain demands and, you know, you kind of start opening up your eyes and, you know, maybe you're not as educated in a certain area. So you educate yourself more. So they kind of allow you, push you to be a better coach for yourself. And opening up and continue to push your education as well.
Yeah. I mean, and it, part of it's probably too, you know, for you, admitting and saying like, I don't know, you know, sometimes yeah. that's oh, the best yeah. thing I'll you be can honest. Do as a coach.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you. Like, honestly, I can't give you an answer, but I'll find out for you. And yeah, and just being transparent and being honest, you know, cause again, I'm not going to lie to someone and say, I know I do something I don't want to do, because that's not who I am. But if I don't know, I'm like, hey, I don't know. I'll get back to you though. Let me do some searching and do some, you know, educating, and I'll get you an answer. I just don't know right now.
And that's how you build trust right there, right? Like, hey, I don't know, but I'm going to do this extra step for you, and I'm going to research it, and I'm going to come back to you with an answer. And yeah. if I don't know, maybe I'll point you in the direction of someone yeah. who does, who had yeah, figured it out. No, that's fantastic.
That's important too. Having relationships with people outside of your realm, you know. So, having good people you can refer them to is also important, because if you have people you can trust and the clients trust you, then you can refer them to the appropriate person and help get them whatever help that they're seeking. And again, that also shows that you care about them and that that they can trust you beyond, you know, helping you make money. You know, like, you know, it's not going to benefit me to send you to this guy, but I trust him and he's going to be able to answer your question better or serve you better. So I have no problem doing that.
Yeah. And then they come on back and they tell you what was done. And now you know for the next time.
Yep. Yep.
It's all just a continuing education. It's just that it's continuing. Yes. It never ends. And it goes beyond articles and books. Sometimes it might even be just like asking an athlete, hey, what do you think? How do you understand this? Like, I've been teaching it to you, but what do you think about this? And then they'll give you feedback and you're like, I never even thought about it that way. Yeah. You know, yeah. And now you have a bag of new cues or just another way to relay it to the next athlete when they maybe don't understand your default way of kind of explaining something.
No, yeah, you're absolutely right.
Now, with coaching, what does coaching mean to you? You know, this is something I think about a lot. Just living as a coach every day, you know, what does it mean to me? What does it mean to you, Jamie?
Like you said, I guess it's more so a lifestyle. It's not something you turn on and off. Whether you're coaching, working with an athlete in a one-on-one setting, or, you know, a group of athletes and in a team setting, or just walking by someone doing open gym, you know, you're kind of always looking for certain things and seeing how an athlete is moving. And, you know, like you said, it's never ending. You're always trying to learn and Whether it's, you know, the X's and O's of the training, you know, how can I get my athletes stronger? How can I make them faster? How can I build their confidence? How can I work on their mental aspect more? But coaching is definitely a passion. It's like you said, a lifestyle, something that, again, I think for me, I've been lucky to kind of fall into it through my passion for training. I didn't realize that it was going to develop into what it has in the sense of the relationship side of things. So coaching is just, you know, it's been a blessing in the sense of I've been able to meet a lot of great people that are, you know, staples in my life. That, you know, I really appreciate the relationships I've gotten through coaching, you know, from the kids I work with at the youth level to the parents, to my, you know, adult clients, and the relationships that they've created with my own family too. So, it's been a passion, and it's been fortunate to fall into it, I guess.
Yeah. It's, I mean, you think back on your life and it's like, well, maybe if I made one different type of decision, I could be in a completely different field. You know, what were you going to school for, back in college? What was it, something else other than training?
No, I knew once I shifted out of my, you know, once I stopped playing football, I realized I knew what I wanted to do. So I was majoring in, sports performance. And I just knew, you know, my goal shifted a little bit. My original goal was to be a strength coach for, you know, a big time college program. And after talking to a couple people that had been there and done that, it just didn't seem like it was going to fit the lifestyle I wanted to have. You know, I wanted to have a family. I wanted to settle down. And it just, you know, from the strength coaches I know that have been at that level, there's, you know, sometimes you're the first guy to go, you'll be without a job. And, you know, moving around a lot, you know, possibly from, you know, whether you're following a head coach, say they lose their job or they get hired somewhere else, you're following them, moving a lot. And it just didn't seem like a lifestyle that, as much fun as it would be, it didn't seem like the lifestyle that I wanted to have. I wanted to have more consistency in my life. So the private practice is kind of something that I fell back on. And also allows you to make it your own too. It's you're not forced into following someone else's lead. You can do what you want to do and make it your own and have something to be proud of and build something that maybe will be sticking around when my kids get older. So
yeah, you're building a legacy and something for your family, which if you're working for a sports team, you know, the loyalty isn't always there. No. from the college, you know, like, especially if you're not winning. Yeah. You know, if you're losing, then you're going to be losing too. And you might be without a job, like you said, then it might be hard to find another job. What has been the biggest challenge across the whole thing in your coaching career that you faced?
Honestly, probably time. You know, there's not enough time in the day, to do everything you want to do. So you got to prioritize a little bit and realize that, you're only one person and you're not gonna be able to do everything you want to do. And that's where it's important to have good people around you, people you trust to do other things. One of my, you know, good quotes from Todd Durkin, do what you do best and hire the rest. So I try to, you know, I think I do my best work in the trenches with the athletes, with my clients. So I try to put most of my time and energy into that. And then try to surround myself with good people to help me handle the other stuff, you know, when it comes to running the business. But I think time in general is the hardest thing because, let's face it, you know, people, your schedule is really around everyone else's schedule. So, it's either early mornings, later afternoons, evenings after work. So trying to prioritize my time, you know, including my time with my family, I think is the hardest thing to do. But again, just like anything else, you just got to find a way to get it done and prioritize your time and have good people around you.
Yeah, I mean, that's important, being able to delegate. And, you know, I mean, you don't need to be the one that's maybe creating a banner in Microsoft Word or Excel or something like that. You know, you need to be the guy coaching and someone else can probably handle that other type of stuff.
Yeah.
Now, what do you do anything special to kind of budget your time? Like, do you have a calendar? Do you have like a checklist on paper, you know, a whiteboard?
Now, just because I said that that's the point, that's the thing, doesn't mean I'm good at it.
Oh, okay.
So that's what I'm, that's, I mean, it's there. It's, I still have a hard time, I guess, budgeting my time, but that's probably, so I'm still working on it, I guess you say. It's a work in progress still. Because I also have a hard time saying no. So if someone's asking me to do something or do trainings a certain time, I have a hard time telling them no. So yeah, that's still a work in progress though.
Yeah. Saying no is hard. You know, it's like someone's like, hey, Jamie, can you train me at 5 a.m.? And you're like, well, I enjoy doing that. So getting up at 5 a.m. isn't a huge obstacle. You know, I'm not getting up to go do something that I don't like to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now with your barbell club, well, when did you decide you wanted to have a barbell club? And, you know, what is your approach with the barbell club and how you accept new members onto it and your programming?
Honestly, I think I got into it, it was about 3 years, probably 3 years ago now. We did our level one cert. We hosted a level one cert at our gym. Got certified as a coach, and then a month later, that was the whole reason of, I guess, becoming a level one, because you had to be a level one to have a barbell club. So that was part of the process, and I did that and started just because we had a small handful of lifters that enjoyed lifting and competing. So we, at that point, we hadn't done any competitions as a group. I had one lifter that was doing, I think she did the Empire State Games back when that was. Did you guys host that out there?
Oh, the Liberty Games?
Liberty Games. That's what it was. Liberty Games. Oh, yeah.
We hosted that. That was like June 2016. And that meet went from 7 a.m. till like 11 p.m. or midnight, because we had over 80 lifters. Because that was another thing of not saying no. You know, the meet director, people kept emailing them if they could get in. And he's like, yeah, you can get in.
Yeah. Yeah, so actually it's funny because, she did that meet, and that kind of sparked it for me, because there was, you know, again, one of my athletes was interested and wanted to, you know, I had probably a couple other athletes that were also interested but didn't actually compete at that point. So I was like, okay, well, let's get a group together. Let's get affiliated and let's see what happens.
So that athlete, that was Stacy?
Yeah, Stacy DeForest. Okay.
Yeah, I saw she just did very well at the AO3, right?
Yeah, she did. It was a little different circumstances.
Yeah.
From her garage, but
oh, that's cool. Congrats to her. I saw she placed.
She's been pushing through all this and training hard and under all these different circumstances. But no, she's very deserving of that.
Oh yeah, I remember her at that meet. I think she showed up, and I think she might have been by herself. I don't know if anyone was with her, but Jim Storch kind of took her under his wing.
Yeah,
and helped her out that meet.
Yeah. Jim's been, kind of, we kind of see him all over the place, you know, but, he's been a great resource for her, for myself. He's great for the sport, and, he's been very helpful, especially as a younger, I guess, a barbell owner, you know, hosting meets and stuff. He's always been someone I've been able to reach out to and ask, you know, questions or concerns, or, even if I need help with stuff, he's always willing to drive up and help out. Occasionally he'll compete in the meets, which is always fun to watch. But no, Jim's a great guy and a great resource to have.
And the Wheatons too, when they come on out.
Yes.
They're always running the card table.
Yep. They're all good people. But yeah, honestly, it was her that kind of got me interested into expanding actually creating the barbell club and just trying to, put together a little competitive team, as I guess, again, coming from a team sport, I like the team concept. And we just started saying, okay, well, we got only a couple lifters, but it doesn't mean we can't go do stuff. So we reached out, obviously went to local meets and enjoyed training for them. And, over the course of the years, people come and go. Our barbell club is still relatively small, but it's really never been anything we look to expand upon and make it a real big thing, just because I think our area, it's definitely a more of a niche based type of fitness that not everyone's interested in, but those that are interested in are definitely a hardcore group of people that we welcome with open arms and enjoy them being a part of our team. And obviously we haven't been able to do many meets recently, but we're looking forward to the meet we have coming up. Getting excited about that.
Yeah, Christmas and Kilos. This is the third annual Christmas and Kilos event. I love the name, and I love the play on the Caffeine and Kilos logo.
No, it's always a fun meet. Like you said, it's our third one. I think the first year we had about 40 athletes. Last year it was close to 60. So I'm hoping, you know, if we can get around the 40 range this year, considering the circumstances, I'll be happy. Still trying to figure out if we're going to have any, you know, limitations on attendance and, you know, any sanitation rules between athletes touching the bar and this and that. I'll have to, I guess, do some more research or see where we're at in a couple months. But it'll probably be a little different under the circumstances, but we're still looking to have a good meet because, again, I think also some people are ready to do something. We were set to host the state championships end of this month, but we as a committee decided to cancel that just because of circumstances, and it wasn't going to be what we wanted it to be, so we didn't want to compromise the meet. So we're set to host it next year, which is great, so we'll still have that opportunity.
Now, I heard that the LWC has kind of taken over the reins of that. Is that true? What's going on with that?
Well, they've taken on more of a role in the sense of, because they want consistency regardless of who's hosting it. So they want, you know, to share the love in the sense of letting different gyms or different regions host the event. So when it comes down to the actual meet and how it's run, it's essentially up to the meet director how it's done. But they definitely have a role in, you know, and you're able to use their resources. But like, for instance, they want to have consistency, obviously, from year to year. So, the medals are going to be the same. You know, you're not going to choose the design of the medals. They came up with a design this year that they're going to continue to use. And I think it works better, too, from the meet director, because there's some things that they're going to take care of that you don't have to stress about and worry about. So you can just focus on the meet itself and running the meet. You don't have to worry about buying medals and this and that. They're going to have everything provided for you. And then, essentially they – figure out a cost and you purchase them from them as needed. So you know how it is running a meet. Sometimes you got to figure out, I got to have this many medals for this. I got to have this, I got that. So it seems like we've worked out an easier solution to make that a little bit easier on the meet director, so we can focus more on the meet itself.
So they're going to handle all the back end stuff, medals, banners, t-shirts, all that stuff. And they're kind of the LWC's footing the bill for that, so to say, or is that part of the registration?
We got to a certain point and then things kind of, hit a halt because of obviously the virus. I know they were going to take care of the backdrops and stuff like that. We are going to be responsible for any t-shirts, et cetera.
Those would be the resources you mentioned that you're able to take advantage of, and they probably can, are they going to provide like referees? There'll be like national level refs there.
Essentially up to me who I want to use, but there's plenty of national level referees available that I can use as resources. So there's tons of help available to make it the type of meet we want it to be, with the type of referees and national level support. The goal is to make it like a open series meet, and we definitely have the resources and the people to make it like that. And that was the main reason to cancel it or postpone it, because we, knowing what we were capable of doing, we didn't want to dilute it or dumb it down a little bit just to do it. We want to keep it a high level meet, and we just didn't feel like we were capable of doing it this year with, not knowing what was going to happen.
So essentially with the LWC's involvement, it's going to elevate it from the level of a local meet, let's say in a sense of the Christmas and Kilos, where it's just a regular gym hosting it. You know, there isn't all the flair and other things, not that we need that, but, we'll show up. Well, yeah, we'll show up to the States and it's going to be like we're showing up to the AO series, essentially.
Yeah, that's the vision. We had a ballroom rented out at our local Holiday Inn, so we're going to have plenty of space. We're going to have, you know, banners set up in the lobby, you know, welcoming the athletes. And it was going to give – the goal was to give a feel of a national-level meet for a state championship. And actually, you know, so as an athlete, as a competitor, to compete as a potential national or state champ is cool.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think that there's something that's elite about that. Not that you had to qualify to go to the meet, but it was definitely gives you a sense of a elitist type competition. So it definitely feels like a heightened sense of urgency with the sense of the competition.
Now, how does this work with, I'm not sure if you're involved in this part of the conversation. There are multiple LWCs in New York State, and this is where it kind of gets tricky on like hosting the quote unquote state championships. I know some people, you know, out towards the Niagara district were not happy that we were over here doing the state quote unquote championships. Are they going to be involved? Is this going to be one unified state? Do you know anything about that?
Yeah. We were able to, I think, get everyone on board to at least for the location, you know, the Central New York location. I think everyone was able to agree upon that because it was within reason for everyone to commute. I know last year it was downstate. I know that from what I heard that caused, you know, some grumbling, but I think, being where we're located, we're fortunate enough to kind of make everyone happy enough to host it. But yeah, I didn't get in on all the conversation, but I could tell that, you know, that there's some back and forth going on between,
hopefully some unity happening.
Yeah, no. And I think that did happen at least this year. And, we'll be able to carry that into next year and hopefully have a great meet and, you know, someone else in, you know, maybe this area will be able to host it, you know, the following year.
Yeah. I mean, hey, I'm all for hosting it in this general area, selfishly, as opposed to having to drive 5 hours out to Buffalo or the other way, you know, so
yeah,
it's kind of nice being centrally located.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Well, that's exciting. I mean, I can't wait for that to happen. I mean, we were all really amped for the meet this year. Then of course it got canceled. But any kind of a rough date on when you guys are thinking next year?
I think it's the third or last Saturday / Sunday in October. So it was going to be this, I think, 17th and 18th of this month. So it's just going to be pushed out roughly a year from then. So end of October area.
Okay. So we'll have to put that on the calendar. Now with Christmas and Kilos, that's coming up. I'm trying to get all my people to go out and do that. We've got some big goals for it. With Christmas and Kilos, what is it like running a meet? Like, anyone listening doesn't realize all the work that goes into putting on a meet, all of the emails that you probably get the night before. Can I do this? Can I do that? What about my weight? Can I go up or down? When is my session again? Even though you just posted the document on when everyone's lifting session is, can you kind of go through just a little bit on the ins and outs of putting on a weightlifting meet?
Again, I don't say no often, so it makes more work for me. Where some people,
I'm kind of nervous now that we're putting that out there.
Yeah, I know, right? So I try to over accommodate for everyone, any changes or whatever, you know, I'm try to be as willing as possible. Because again, the meet is essentially, you want everyone to have a good experience. And I think that's my ultimate goal is to run a good meet that, you know, everyone walks away feeling good about how it was ran. It was organized. The facility was nice. It was clean. The people were very helpful, you know, just all around. I want them to walk away feeling good about their experience. Not only just for that meet, but, you know, so maybe, you know, when we're hosting another one, they'll want to come back or they'll tell their friends about it. But there's a lot that goes into it from the regards of preparing, reaching out to barbell clubs, just promoting the event itself. Because sometimes, you know, not everyone is in the know of what's going on, and or just late to the party and realizing that, oh wow, there's a meet coming up, I didn't realize. So there's a lot in the respect of just promoting it, Then collecting all the entries, you know, getting our, you know, because we normally give out free shirts, so shirt, you know, getting that order placed, make sure that's timely, getting our the appropriate, you know, amount of medals, make sure all everything's coming in at the same time, get the awards taken care of, get our volunteers in place, because that's tough too, because everyone's got stuff going on the weekends. So whether it's, you know, such and such can help from this time to this time, but okay, well, that's great. But now we got to get someone to fill in for them from this time to this time. Getting, you know, judges and referees, but normally we get it all worked out, but that's definitely one of the headaches or struggles behind the scenes is coordinating everything, get everyone in place and where they need to be. But again, it's kind of chaotic, but it's fun at the same time. So you don't always see the chaos behind the scenes because hopefully it looks smooth from the outside. But yeah, there's a lot that goes into it, but again, I enjoy doing it or else I want to keep doing it, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, you guys do a great job. We enjoy going out to those meets and finding volunteers is difficult. So if anyone's listening, highly recommend you go onto the USAW's website, take the free referee test, and then maybe you email Jamie and say, hey, can I volunteer? Can I ref a session? You know, it's hard to find, you know, bodies to put in those seats.
Yeah. Yeah. Our lifting community has been great. People are willing to help, but again, it's not a problem to have too many volunteers for sure.
No, never. Well, Jamie, this has been great talking to you, learning about your history, getting to know you more. Do you have any closing words or advice or thoughts for the listener?
Just again, if you're a lifter, you know, keep lifting, you know, find a coach. If you don't have a coach, if you're looking for a barbell club, you know, get on USA Weightlifting, find a local club, reach out to the coaches. It's sometimes a little intimidating starting out, but I think you'll be surprised in the community and the support you'll have. Probably will welcome you with open arms. And you know, gym owners, you know, it's tough times, but keep pushing through. I think there is light at the end of the tunnel. And again, I appreciate you. I appreciate you putting on this interview and taking me on as your guest. I look forward to seeing you guys soon at the meet.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love having you on. Great talking to you again. December 13th, right?
Yeah, the Saturday, I think it's 13th. Yeah, 12th or 13th. I can't remember, but it's that Saturday.
Oh, it's the 12th. Yep, December 12th. So Saturday, December 12th, we're all going to meet out in Auburn at Swagler Strength and Performance, and we're going to have a great time. So if you haven't signed up already and you're listening, what are you waiting for? Let's do it. The registration link for the meet will be in the show notes. So no excuse on not being able to find it or anything like that. So sign up for the meet. Jamie, where can everyone follow you?
We got our Instagram, Swagler Strength. On Facebook, you know, same thing, Swagger Strength. Yeah, we like to put our updates up on there, whether it be our Instagram or Facebook. We also do have a Swagger Strength Barbell Club Facebook page. It does have the link on there as well for the Christmas and Kilos. Any other meets we have coming up will be posted there as well.
Awesome. Perfect. So check out those pages, sign up for the meet, support local meets, support local gyms and coaches. It's more important now than ever. So, you know, if you're a person who supports remote coaches, find one in the next door and support them instead. It's very important for the overall community. Jamie, thank you so much for coming on. Make sure that you follow the Barbell Strikes Back on Instagram. Follow me, James A. McDermott, on Instagram. Until next time.